You're listening to Lather Talk with your hosts, John Shea and Gerard Gustilo.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Lather Talk. This is John here. First off, we have a brand new intro courtesy of friend of the show, Arvin Lucio. Thank you so much, Arvin, for lending your smooth, sultry voice to the show. Also, I am very excited to introduce to you our guest today, Rob Moffitt of Chisel and Hound. Rob is a talented artisan shaving brush maker based out of Alexander, Arkansas. You may have known him by his previous name, That Darn Rob. He went full-time into brushmaking October 2019, and Gerard and I had the pleasure of collaborating with Rob for the recent release of Voices. In our conversation, we'll get into how Rob started wet shaving, how he started turning brushes, being a dad, the challenges of transitioning into a full-time brushmaker, and we'll also get an in-depth look on how Rob's Venturian Badger Knots came about, as well as his insights on customer preferences in brushes and how that's changed over time. As always, a big thank you to the Lather Talk patrons. Thank you guys for financially supporting the show and the channel. If you'd like to help out, you can get more information at www.patreon.com/lathertalk, get access to behind-the-scenes looks and outtakes, and much more. All right, so without further delay, let's get on to our interview with Rob. All right, and we are live. Guys, I am joined along with my co-host, Gerard. Hey, Gerard.
Hey, what's going on?
We are joined by a wonderful guest, someone that we've wanted on the show for a while now, and we finally made it happen this episode. Folks, will you please give a warm welcome to Rob Moffitt of Chisel and Hound. Rob, how are you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure to have you on, sir. Rob is very well known for his shaving brushes, artisan brush maker in the house. So I think we can just start kind of a very standard question, kind of just to warm things up. And that is, how did you get into wet shaving?
I've got fairly sensitive skin, and for a long time, using multi-blade razors, I was getting bumps and razor burn and stuff. So I went looking for something better. Saw a couple of YouTube videos and picked up a Gillette pre-war tech at a flea market for like $5. Grabbed a Vonderhagen set from Walmart, and I was off to the races. And I used that god-awful boar brush and that shed with every use, and that lousy soap for probably a year or two, and it's kind of built from there.
I used that very same set. I don't know if I ever told you that. I started out with that. Did it come with the little green bowl as well?
Yeah, blue on the outside, green on the middle.
Yeah.
In the middle. Yeah. With a little blue plastic brush.
But you stuck out with that set for like over a year?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't realize that there was anything else out there. I didn't realize there were all these like shave communities on Facebook and Reddit and all this. So I just rocked with what I had.
Yeah.
And then my dad, for Christmas one year, made me a set. He made pens primarily, but he saw that there were kits available for razors and brushes, so he made me one, and I loved it, despite the fact that it was the knot was actually worse than that Vonderhagen, if you can believe it, but I eventually pulled it out and put a little Plisson knot in there and used that. And that got me to thinking, you know, just having that set, I was like, man, I'll bet there's a market for this. So by that time, I kind of found I guess I found Wicked Edge first on Reddit and realized that, oh, there are a lot of guys doing this or, you know, shaving like this. There's probably a market for nicer brushes than this Walmart garbage. And that kind of led me to getting a lathe and trying making brushes for myself.
All right. So you shared how you got into wedge shaving, and now we have the kernel of, you know, realizing there's a market, especially particularly for brushes. So kind of walk us through how did you, you know, kind of what was it like first getting on onto the lathe to the point of like, when did you sell your first brush and kind of that journey?
All right. Well, I had to justify buying a lathe because I didn't have a business going yet. So I came up with some projects around the house that needed to be done, and I didn't have any proper tools. So I found a ShopSmith, which is a combination machine that's uses one motor and it has different attachments. So it can be a table saw, it can be a bandsaw, a drill press, a lathe, and belt sander, disc sander, all kinds of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. You just have to, you know, change its orientation and you can move it from one position to another and have different machines, which is good in theory. It's not good at any of those roles. And then most of them are sketchy as hell. I picked up the lathe or the ShopSmith and got started. I didn't feel like I was ready to do brushes yet. So I started making razors, because the razor kits were fairly inexpensive and they started selling. I was putting them up on Facebook and Reddit, and people started buying them and they started asking about brushes. And okay. I just kept saying, I don't know how to do that. You know, I'm not, because I didn't want to do the kits, because I saw the shortcomings of those. And then Matthew Marting, brush guy, reached out to me on Reddit and was like, hey, I've seen your razors. They look great. You need to make some brushes, and kind of got me started, told me, you know, what I needed and, you know, how to do it basically, you know, do this, flip it around, do that. And, I picked up a few things and, started. The first few were pretty rough looking back, but, you know, just kind of incrementally got better and started working in different materials and, pouring my own resins and stuff. And Matthew was a big help there as well. Kind of talking me through, okay, well, this is what you need to buy. Here's where you can buy pigments and, you know, things like that. And, you know, I've kind of passed that to other brush makers as I got going and figured it out on my own. Kind of passing that on to other guys, through the years.
That's great. I feel like we've heard other similar stories, whether it's brush makers kind of helping out, you know, people new to that craft, soap makers getting assistance. I think that came up when mm-hmm. we talked to mm-hmm. Chris Cullen of Katie's Bubbles.
Exactly. I was going to say that Chris is notorious for, you know, being the big brother of the soap community.
Totally. And it's like on two fronts, right? For the actual soap making. And then, hey, you want to get into like making your own your fragrances. How do you start with that? He's such a great resource. Like if he's in your Facebook group or, you know, or like subreddit, such a valuable resource. We love you, Chris.
Mm-hmm. Not getting enough drama, talking smack, or hooligan hijinks from your regular forums, social media, or Reddit? Well, the Lather Talk Discord is not for you. Sorry to disappoint. But if you're looking for a cool place to hang out with fellow traditional shaving degenerates, come on down to the Lather Talk Discord. Share your shave of the days, mail calls, or talk about your favorite hardware or software and just about everything in between. Once again, that's Lather Talk Discord. Check out the link below.
Rob, how many kids do you have?
I've got two.
How many do you claim?
Oh, boy.
you had asked me a couple of years ago, it would have been a different answer. But now I've got Cash, who's 5, mm-hmm. 6. He would have yelled at me. He's 6. And Haley is 19 from my first marriage. I was 22 when she was born. Wow. And that was tough, but
a couple. See, like I'm 39. I'm an old first time dad, and you're a young first time dad.
Yes, and also an old first, an old
second time dad.
Yeah,
oldish second time dad.
I had it all figured out, guys. Haley was going to graduate high school.
Yeah,
the week before my 40th birthday, and I was done. And then had Cash. So started over from scratch.
Dun, 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 dun.
Exactly. Nothing that I've learned with Haley will apply, because so much time has gone by. They're living in different worlds.
Yeah.
Not to mention, he's a little boy and she was a little girl, and they're so freaking different. So yeah, I'm starting from scratch, just older.
I'm sure there's some things though, as far as like, you know, like what
kids
you
need love.
Yeah. Yeah. Some things hold true regardless. Right. Yeah. And, but I think
eventually like,
what you freak out over or what makes you, oh boy.
I'm Asian. What is love? I've told John this story, right? Like, you know, like growing up, you know, from parents who immigrated here to the United States, like my parents were chill for, you know, like relatively chill as Asian parents, but I legitimately do not remember hearing the words "I love you" from their mouths until like my 30th birthday. My mom was in the Philippines and called me, like, you know, just to say like hi, because she missed my birthday that year. And then at the end of it, she's like, okay, well, I'll talk to you later, I love you, bye. And I was like,
who is this?
What? I'm like, all right, love you, bye. And then I hang up the phone, I call my brothers, I'm like, hey, did you talk to mom? And they're like, yeah. And they're like, hey, did she tell you like I love you? And they're like, yeah, is she sick? Like, we all thought, like, is she going to tell us that she has, like, cancer or something?
Oh, no.
And I'm, like, and we still don't even know why. We don't know why it was then.
Did she read a book or something?
My mom doesn't read.
it was the Holy Ghost. The Holy Ghost inspired her.
Yeah, and it was, they got us pretty much, like, you know, everything that we ever needed growing up. Very, very good. You know, like
just
middle class childhood. It's just like the words. It was the words, right?
Which the whole, you know, five love languages thing. It's like traditional Asian families are much more acts of service than what's the other, is it words of encouragement
or
not to say it doesn't happen. Affirmation. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah,
not to say it doesn't happen, but there is this kind of weird through line amongst different Asian ethnicities, even where this holds true. What were some of the kind of like the big challenges to transition to full time brush making?
I think the biggest thing was discipline. I did not think, like, if you had asked me at any point in my life if I was going to own my own business or be an entrepreneur, that was the farthest thing from my mind. I never thought along those lines. The goal when I was in college, I went to college for studio art, and everybody asked, what the heck are you going to do with that? Because frankly, I wasn't that good. But the plan was, I will live in a van and sell enough to get by, you know, that was the whole plan. Until I had a daughter at the age of 22, and then that kind of sobers you up. And I switched over to graphic design, and my ambition was to work for an advertising agency, and you know, I have my work in glossy magazines, and that didn't pan out either. I mean, I did work in advertising for a little while, but I never thought, oh, I'm going to be my own boss. And so whenever I actually left my 9-to-5 job, it was okay. Immediately establish a schedule, because I'm a procrastinator by nature. I had to force myself into a rigid structure, and that structure has changed a little bit over the last 3 years, but there's still very much a structure to my day. There's a structure to the 2 week cycle of a drop. So that was probably the biggest adjustment for me, was, you know, scaling things up and keeping things on a schedule. And thinking about the money differently as well, because, you know, when I had a full-time job, the brush making money, well, that was just excess. That was fun money, you know? And so we used it to pay off all of our debt. We did all this stuff. And I, you know, if I saw a tool I needed or wanted, I bought it. And when half of the income goes away, the half that's left is, you know, there's no more fun to be had.
All right, Rob, so now we have some listener.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Questions for you. These are coming from the Lather Talk Discord. I always leave a little advertisement from our good friend Arvin for the Discord, but we'd love for you guys to come check it out. You can interact with us, talk about shaving and non-shaving things, and also, you know, you have a chance to have your question be asked to the guest. So here, it's not all of them, but here are a few choice ones. And just to open things up, first question here is from Wise One, and he asks, why do all brush makers have beards? It's weird.
Just as a rule, brush makers are wildly unattractive people. As much of this as we can cover up, the better, you know.
The next question is from Ray Mooney. How do you come up with the names for your brush handles?
The naming of brushes is one of the worst parts of the job. And I hate to break it to everybody, but they're meaningless. I would prefer to just give them numbers and send them out the door. But that doesn't work. They literally don't sell as well. I tried it several times in the past, and the brushes would just sit there. I'd go in, say a week later, tack a name on after the number, and they would start selling. So, wow. Yeah, a lot of times the names are just the materials that they're made of. You know, when it comes to wooden brushes, and sometimes it'll be you know, influenced by the music I'm listening to when I turn it, or, you know, I don't know. I'll think of something funny and nobody else might get it, but it's a joke in here somewhere and it makes me happy. So.
I have a proposition for future names. So if you want to choose names like apathy, I don't care anymore, monkey's paw, because no matter what you wish, it's going to be bad.
There you go. There you go.
You know, you don't have to give me credit, but if I see it out there and it sells quicker than the others, then we will know.
there was one brush that had a meaningful name. That was a brush called Suck It Esposito.
Oh yes. Yes. I remember seeing that.
Yeah, because
I was so tempted to click on and buy it.
Our mutual acquaintance, mm-hmm. It's the nicest word I can come up with, for Ben.
We just want to make sure it's Ben Esposito and not the other one.
Oh yeah, yeah. Ben Esposito, House of Mammoth.
Yeah.
Yes. He in one of our group chats, he was talking about how no brush makers make a solid black brush. You know, are you guys too afraid to see, you know, to show the flaws in your work or whatever? So I made a solid black brush and called it Suck It Esposito. And to Ben's credit, he bought the brush.
Like immediately.
Yeah.
I think I remember yeah. You actually posting the link. And I think by the time I saw it, it was like 5 minutes later, it was already gone.
I might start just doing random call outs of specific people, you know, and see if they'll, you
know. Moving on.
Anyway.
Next question. On. we like to have a good time, but you know, get some stuff done too. Next question comes from Disco Ball. And they ask, do you see yourself making brushes from different materials in the future? And trying something new, not necessarily for selling, but for personal use or simply testing?
Constantly. I'm always looking for new materials, novel materials. You know, I got curious the other day and was trying to come up with the number of different woods that I've used, and just started a list, like an Excel spreadsheet, of every wood that I could think of that I've made brushes from, and I'm up to 115 species of wood. You know, different plastics, different resins, woolly mammoth ivory, Fordite, and then, you know, I've got brushes that are conglomerations of 10, 15 different materials altogether. Leather. I've used, you know, stacked leather in the past. So yeah, I'm constantly looking for something else that I can incorporate, something else that I can dabble with.
I've got a sub question to tack onto that one. Off the top of your head, favorite material you've used and most hated material you've used.
Ooh, okay. Favorite material. It's not an exciting material at all. It's a very common one. But cherry. It's, you know, I mean, it's a domestic hardwood, so it's cheap. It's readily available. But it's so fun to turn. The smell is amazing. It takes a finish really well. It can be polished to like a glass-like finish. It's just a pleasure to cut, and every time I do it, I think I should do this every day. Least favorite? It's a really tight race. Number one, I'm going to say black palm. Worst material I've ever worked with. It's if you imagine, like, say bamboo skewers, you know, they're really hard, really fibrous. If you had a handful of bamboo skewers and stuck them together with chewing gum and then tried to turn it, that's about what it's like turning black palm. It's awful. Chunks come out and it breaks weird. It's not fun. I've done it twice. I'll never do it again. And then Fordite's pretty terrible. Just because you've got all these layers of paint, right? Fordite is chunks of paint from Ford factory spray booths, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it's just thousands of layers of paint caked up over years, and then they break it out and they sell it. And every now and then you'll have a layer of paint that doesn't stick to the layer below it. And so you'll be turning and then just a whole chunk of resin or paint comes out, and then, you know, you're left with this, you know, pitted mess, and you have to kind of piece it back together and try again. And then Woolly Mammoth Ivory. It's really special. I enjoy the finished product because it's beautiful, and it's one of those things where, holy cow, this was hanging off the face of an elephant, you know, 40,000 years ago. That's mind blowing to me that I get to hold it, much less to create something out of it. You know, that's pretty special. But it smells like absolute ass. Just earned that explicit tag. It smells very much like burning hair when you're working with it, because it is, you know, it's essentially 40,000-year-old keratin. So whenever you heat it up, it just stinks. In fact, last time I worked with it, I had a huge chunk of it. It's like, I don't know, 5 or 6 inches in diameter, several pounds of ivory. And I was cutting it on my bandsaw, had the roll-up doors on my shop open, and my neighbors were complaining about the smell. And their house is not close. it's like 100 yards from my shop to their house. It was potent.
Wow.
My wife made me leave my clothes on the back porch. I couldn't bring them in the house.
Yeah.
All right. John, we have to figure out an item that Rob can turn so that it can take the first place on worst things ever.
Durian.
At least petrified durian. Okay.
No, I know you
turn
you.
Fruits. But maybe.
That's a hard pass on the durian.
Are you familiar with it?
I'm familiar, yeah. I've never had it. But my wife actually lived for a few years in Thailand when she was in high school.
Oh.
And she
likes durian?
Oh, God, no. But I've heard horror stories about it. And then we, anytime we're in that we go back to Oklahoma City, they've got a huge Asian market.
And you smell the place before you see it.
You do. My last trip through through that market, you know, they've got all the tanks of live fish in the back, and then which smell amazing. And then the durian is just wrapped in just layer on layer of saran wrap to kind of keep it contained. But it's, it will not be tamed.
No.
Just to, you know, inform people who are who don't know, durian is a tropical fruit, if you can call it that, that grows predominantly in Southeast Asia. It is known as the smelliest fruit in the world. It has the texture of like a runny cheese. Some people thinks, you know, thinks it smells great. I don't talk to those people anymore. I've also heard it's like you know, rotting cheese and feet, you know, like came together and just assaulted your palate on your taste buds.
Garlic and feet. It's terrible.
Yeah, I've had it once.
Have I had it? Yes.
You've had it, yeah. I've had it once in Taiwan. I describe it as like an onion custard with like a little tinge of mango.
I think it is like bad breath.
Onion custard. Like, those are onion, two words that just don't belong anywhere like, near one another.
There's two things you don't expect to put together, but there they are when it's ripe.
Everyone should be thankful that Voices ended up being mango sticky rice and not a durian like derivative.
Yeah.
Speaking of Voices, though, I should have done this at the top of the show, but Rob, we really do have to thank you, both of us, for just helping us out with that release, turning those brushes that you did with the mango wood, and just offering, you know, your services unsolicited. So we really appreciate that. We thought those brushes came out beautifully, and just really happy to have you kind of, you know, along for the ride for that first release of ours.
Oh, you're absolutely welcome. It was a pleasure working, you know, with you guys and for a cause as important as stopping Asian hate.
It's okay to hate durian, though, just to put that out there. It's okay, guys. Just because you...
Wait, what's that meme? It's just like, it's you know, like racial hate, you know, like food hate, durian hate. like
together. Oh, the arms clasp.
Yes.
So good.
We're going to find someone's going to comment now. Someone's going to be just like, I don't know what you guys are, you know, talking about how durian is terrible.
Oh, yeah.
It is not that bad. It's pretty bad.
It's for the...
leave that.
If you question whether it's a fruit or not, like if I ate it and I'd be like, is this food? Like that would be like, is this cheese? They're like, this is a fruit. This grows from the ground. What? Like that.
Yeah.
I will say this. You know, I will say this. Durian in certain products is okay. It's tolerable. I've had like durian like muffins. I've had durian ice cream. Those were both okay. Am I jumping to those things? No, never.
Yeah, right? There are plenty of better ice creams than durian, right?
Durian candy is awful. It is so awful. Durian chewing gum is awful. It is.
It's okay.
I go for gum to keep my breath from smelling like durian.
Yes.
Like, what? That,
that's we'll have to go back to, for people who might not have liked the Voices, you know, set. We said different strokes for different folks. So
there
acquired
you go,
taste
maybe you'll
is, a,
sell
is on, another phrase.
I'm definitely, yeah. I will definitely pull.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust, Rose, and I think a little fear.
Really? But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
My name out of that hat, like,
we're
going durian, I am not... I'm not associating myself with that project.
I think it would hurt your cause. It would hurt your cause.
The proceeds would go to, more AAPI hate if that was the case. Okay. That is not happening. Sure. So this is from J Beast Mode. It's basically in relation to a lot of it is based upon the knots that you use. So have you seen much change in demand in the brush industry? And then the knot related questions are like, any plans to make hand tied knots or offer sizes other than 26 millimeter? And how much transparency is there when you get a new batch of your Venturians? Like, do you get to like test the hair prior to knowing what you get, or is it just like at this point I pretty much trust what they're going to give me?
Okay. As far as different demands in brush making or trends in brush making and not characteristics, there are definitely trends that come and go. A few years ago, it was density. You could not make a knot dense enough. Everybody was trying to have the absolute densest clump of hair they could possibly get. That got to a point where it was ridiculous and people were like, oh, these aren't great. they hold too much lather. They get too stiff when you get that much. So things kind of settled back down. And then it was gel tips. Oh, who's got the jelliest tips out there? And it got to the point where it was like using a slimy mop with some of the different fibers that were out there that were just way over treated. And, that's kind of been reined back in as well. So there's always something, seems like there's always a fad, and if there's a market there, makers are going to fill that demand, and then it will get carried too far and we'll rein it back in, what was the next question?
Any hand-tied knots?
Next part of the question. Hand-tied knots. Mitch Hedberg has a bit where he talks about, when you're a comedian, everyone wants to know, well, do you write? Do you act? And it's kind of like you work for years to become a great chef and to learn to cook, and somebody asks, well, do you farm? Yeah. I don't plan to make hand-tied knots. That's not what I enjoy. I'm glad there are guys out there who do, and I support their hustle. But that doesn't really appeal to me right now. I want to focus all of my energy on coming up with creative, unique handles. I have sourced what I believe is one of the best knots out there, that is a great value. The bang for the buck of the Venturian knot is... I'd put that up against anything. So it would take a lot of time, a lot of effort for me to get to the point where I could make a knot comparable to the Fanchurian, right? So I would rather invest that time in the craft that I enjoy, which is making the handles. That's kind of unfortunate because the market is set up in a way where if you're not making hand-tied knots, you're kind of considered a second-tier maker, right? Because there's this perception that, you know, if you're just buying an off-the-shelf, in air quotes, knot, that it's not as good as the hand-tied options. And I'm not saying that the hand-tied options aren't incredible, but that's not my focus. My focus is on these beautiful handles that I want to be works of art, and I want to be like heirloom quality handles. All that to say, I don't plan on doing hand-tied knots. Respect those who do. As far as 28 millimeter knots, I've had a lot of requests for that. The problem with doing 28 millimeter is I would have to choose one or the other, and just drop 26 millimeter to focus on 28, because if I turned a handle and it's this, you know, one of a kind handle and it's bored for a 26 millimeter, but the customer wants a 28, well, I'm going to have to either recreate it or I'm going to have to, you know, Dremel it out to fit a 28 millimeter or vice versa. You know, I make a 28 millimeter handle that's too big for a 26 millimeter knot. And, you know, the end customer gets it and it's like, oh, I didn't realize this was a 28. I've got a 26 millimeter tuxedo here that I'm wanting to put in it. First of all, no, please don't. I'm not a fan.
Not a fan. I was gonna say,
not a fan of synthetic knots in general, and I loathe the tuxedo. Anyway, no, not gonna do 28 millimeter. When it comes to transparency when sourcing my knots, I guess it was about 4 years ago when I sourced the first batch of Fanchurians. I checked around, found a source that I was comfortable with, and explained what I wanted. You know, I want a super high quality fan shaped knot, 26 millimeters. I want a nice tall loft, you know, something with some real backbone and scrub. And they said, oh yeah, we can do that. And they sent me a batch. The first batch was very small and I did not get to try it out before it arrived. So when it arrived, it was surprisingly good, but it didn't have the density that I really wanted. This was right at the beginning of the density wars. So we kind of went back and forth. And each batch we kind of argued for lack of a better word, or I would tell them, you know, okay, I like this, I don't like this, you know. Okay, well, this batch was really, the density was great, but the glue flared out up above the plug and it was tough to get into, you know, the bore of the handle. So you got to get that glue under control. Okay, great. That batch was much better, but there were, you know, an excessive number of upside down hairs and I had to pluck them out. So it's been a refinement thing. But since about, I don't know, V5, I think is where we really, I think, nailed it. And from then on, it's kind of, okay, I need, you know, 200, 250. You know what I like. And they have provided consistent quality. There's variance between batches, of course, because you're dealing with a natural fiber. But it keeps it interesting, right? Mm. During the pandemic, my source could not get enough hair. They wouldn't confirm, but I think they had to cull a lot of livestock, a lot of badgers, at the beginning stages of the pandemic. And so hair was in very short supply. So I started looking for other suppliers, spent, a ridiculous amount of money ordering samples, and I just couldn't find anything that was worth having. So I went months with no knots at all, rather than sell a subpar knot. And I just waited on my supplier to get the hair that I needed.
You know, like during that gap though, because of sourcing, did you ever waver, like consider synthetic or another non-badger option, or not really? You always kind of wanted something badger.
Feeling horsey?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Oh.
Ugh.
Oh. When I first started, I didn't offer a badger option at all. It was all synthetics, and it was primarily the tuxedo. But once I got, I think it was like V3, V4, I liked my knot enough that I just discontinued all of my other options. I used to offer 10 different knot options, different sizes, different fibers. And once the like V4, V5, whatever it was, got dialed in, I sold off all my old stock, and there's just not enough meat on the bone whenever you pay for a synthetic knot and you're competing with, you know, Maggard or West Coast that are able to sell those things for $4 or $5. There's zero profit in it for a smaller maker. So I just let that go. And I've focused on providing one quality option. I will set any knot you want. If you send me a tuxedo from Maggard, I will set that thing and send it back to you. I'll send my handles to any knotting service, declaration, turn and shave, any of the others, Rhodium, no problem. It makes no difference to me. But when it comes to what I carry and what I stock, and sorry for the air compressor, I don't know if that's picking up.
It's fine.
Okay. As far as what I inventory, yeah, I'm pretty comfortable with my option. Which I guess if there's only one, it's not really an option, is it? Yes or no.
But Rob, recently you had to deal with something that's, you know, quite a setback for a small business, when you had both Facebook and Instagram accounts, I think due to some hacker activity, or they were compromised. Either way, you lost access to them. Mm-hmm. And I was going to say that you got control of them both back, but Rob just informed us, not just as we started recording, that another of the accounts,
you thought you knew.
I thought I knew. I thought everything was in the clear, but it's not. Anyway, can you share with our listeners a little bit of that whole ordeal that happened just recently?
Back in early August, mid August, whatever. I got a notification that my Facebook account had violated community standards and was being disabled, and that I could appeal their decision. So I logged in to take a look, and apparently my account had been hacked and used to publish some heinous content. And so I fully supported Facebook's decision to pull down my page at that point. But I requested an appeal, and they got back with me like a day or two later and were like, no, we've decided that we're just not going to reinstate your account. We're going to keep your data for 30 days and then it will be deleted. And so I scrambled trying to figure out, you know, okay, how do I reach my audience without Facebook, without Instagram? So I got involved with your Discord, actually, which was wonderful. Started marketing myself through my own website using my email list and things like that, things that I'd never done before. And when word got out, the response from the artisan community was amazing. People who by all rights should be considered competitors were sharing my content and were telling people, hey, you need to go to Rob's site. He's got a drop tomorrow. And the community really showed up. Like the drop that happened like 3 days after my account was deleted, was my biggest drop since February of this year. Wow. It was huge. People were just being amazingly supportive. One of my customers reached out to me. He will remain anonymous. He knows who he is and I appreciate him. He reached out. He said, hey, I heard about your problem. I work at Meta. What's going on? Explained it. He got my account. He submitted an internal request for review, got my account restored. And I've had access to it for a little over a month. And then, just this past weekend,
this is the first weekend in October as we talk about this.
Yep.
My account, I was getting some, messages through Facebook Messenger in what was clearly Vietnamese. And so I was like, okay, I don't think I've got any customers in Vietnam yet. This is exciting. So I translated it, and it was a guy asking about vape juice. And so I go to my business page and realize that I have been hacked, and folks from Southeast Asia are using my page to sell vape juice. And it's working out really well for them. So
quite possibly equally heinous content too.
Oh, it's pretty close.
Do they have durian scented flavored vape juice on there?
Gerard, see yourself out, sir. I log in and I realize they have changed me from an administrator to an employee, and they have set themselves up as admins. And now I'm currently locked out again. I'm working with Facebook again, trying to get my account back. Odds are pretty good that once I have it back in my control, I may end up deleting Facebook altogether. And just keeping my self-promotion and Instagram. That's yet to be seen. I'm pretty frustrated, but it's also a great tool. And, you know, I use Facebook Messenger to stay in touch with you clowns. So that would be awful to lose that.
Would it?
maybe I could just get John's number. John, you want to just shoot me your mobile and we'll
just text me. I do think the takeaway from kind of that whole ordeal is to kind of the double down, guys. If you're interested at all in Rob's brushes, keeping on top of drops, because Rob, every 2 weeks or twice a month, like, what's the rough schedule?
Rough schedule is every 2 weeks, yeah. Every other Tuesday.
Okay.
Which, back in my day, gather around, children, I'll tell you a tale. When I was a young man, new music dropped on Tuesdays. You know, now with streaming services, music drops, you know, all the time. But it was on Tuesdays, so I dropped my brushes on Tuesday. But yeah, if you go to chiselandhound.com, scroll to the bottom of the page, you can sign up for the newsletter. You'll get, I only send one email every 2 weeks, and it's just a, hey, I'm going to have a drop. It's going to be at this time on this date. Click here, and it'll take you to a gallery on the website where you can see what's coming. And that's going to be your surefire way to stay informed of what I'm making, when it's going to be available. I promise I won't spam you. But just in case anything happens with social media, yeah. Go sign up for the newsletter. Also, you know, I used to post huge galleries on Facebook and Instagram, and you could see the stuff there. I've decided I'm not going to do that. Now I'm going to just, you know, point you to, hey, I'm having a drop at this time. If you want to see what's available, go to the website, take a look. Because I can use higher quality photos on my website than I can on Instagram. I'd rather have one place where you go and take a look.
Makes sense. So go sign up for that newsletter. Rob barely knows how to use it, so he's not going to be spamming you.
Yeah, I'm just now figuring this thing out.
He's like, oh, I have a newsletter. So you know, you're just getting the most important information. Beautiful brushes too. I don't think we've said that, but like, or we haven't said it enough. Beautiful brushes. Gerard and
two new names for handles. One will be heinous content, and two will be vape juice.
I'm looking, durian.
Number three. So I'm looking forward to durian. To whatever what heinous content, vape juice,
actually, and durian. Okay.
Grape vape.
I've got a couple here. Maybe grape vape juice.
Grape vape juice. Yep.
That's definitely a candidate for grape vape juice.
Oh.
Or just grape juice. I don't know.
I can't in good conscience name anything after durian. So.
You rather name it heinous act than durian.
Heinous content.
Or heinous content, it would be John and Gerard's stupid durian brush. I guarantee you, if you name it that, someone will buy it. Guaranteed. I mean,
yeah, we've been talking for a while now, so thank you so much. It's been such a fun conversation that's gone all over the place. Listeners won't know because I'll have edited it down to something reasonable. But
that's,
I thought,
a good thing. Yeah, we might never recover.
It's for the best.
When you have nothing, but, you don't have to recover anything. Okay.
Let's end on a positive note, this closing question. What is something you're thankful for?
Oh, man. This is something that we do. This is a tradition at my house every evening before I put my son to bed. He sits in my lap and we talk about what we're grateful for that day.
Yeah. Oh, awesome.
So I'm grateful to have the opportunity to do something that I enjoy, for people that I like, And that there's an audience out there that appreciates my work. That's very gratifying. It's very fulfilling. And I don't take that for granted. I appreciate very much the community and the way they support not just Chisel and Hound, but other artisans as well. You know, guys like you who are giving a platform to artisans, you know, people who care enough about these products, not just to spend their money, but to promote them on their pages with shade of the day photos and to talk about them on these, you know, in Discord and subreddits and Facebook groups and all these things. I mean, this community is, they really support their own, and that is, that's not to be taken lightly. And I'm grateful for that.
Well, Rob,
is that ass kissy enough?
I thought it was very genuine. It's a happy.
I'm glad it came off that way. I've been rehearsing that for weeks.
This is not being edited out for sure. this will stay in there.
I'm grateful that there's a sucker born every minute.
Twirled. Yes, yeah.
Twirls eyebrows.
Yeah, eyebrows. oh man. Okay, such a great time, Rob, speaking with you. And on the way out, we mentioned sign up for the Chisel and Hound newsletter. Follow the Chisel and Hound Instagram account. Check out future drops, because I think Rob's always mixing it up, trying new things, and always beautiful brushes to be had on his website. So I think all that's left to say, thank you so much for your time, Rob. We really appreciate you spending some time on the show, and it's been a pleasure.
John, Gerald, thank y'all very much. Y'all have a good evening.
Ralph, take care of yourself.